and welcome to episode 14 of Ladies of the Fright podcast. I am one of your hosts, Lisa Quigley, and I'm joined by Mackenzie Kira, my co-host. Hi, Mackenzie.
Hey, Lisa.
And this is part two of our conversation with Becky Spratford. If you missed part one, you can go back an episode and check it out. If you'd also just like to listen to this episode now and listen to episode part one later, you can do that also. The conversations can be listened to in any order. Otherwise, we're just going to launch right into it. Okay, so I want to take this to, so you have been a guest of honor at StokerCon. You run StokerCon's like library day, which connects librarians with horror readers. And so I would like to talk
with horror, it connects with horror writers.
Horror writers. So I want to talk a little bit about what you do there.
At StokerCon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So I do two things at every StokerCon. I do the Librarian Day. So I make a panel of using what I know about the authors and what I know about the librarians and try to make a panel of things to help educate them. So last year we started with Dacre Stoker talking about, oh, should I be fair, that's the last book I read. The review's just not out. Dracul, the new one. That's the prequel to Dracula, which he did a presentation on. It's very good. Yeah, with J.D. Barker. And he did a preview of it at Librarian Day. So we opened Librarian Day with this presentation about, you know, about the history of Dracula and his, specifically his great-granduncle, Bram Stoker, and his history. And so that set the stage for the day. It got everyone in the mood. And then what we did was we had a panel on, like, why horror? You know, why do you write horror? And we talked. And I was one of the panelists. And then we had a thing where we had talk about young authors and what it's like breaking into the business and how they could work with libraries. And we did something on how to program for horror at your library. And then we ended with a traditional book buzz, which is something librarians are used to, where all the publishers sent us their upcoming books and that they thought were horror, or what I call horror adjacent, like, mm-hmm. you know, something that their horror readers would like. And then they like told the librarians all about them and provided some books for them to take home. So that was fantastic. And we educated it. We had like a super small press there, Bloodshot Books, who were local. And I really try, like, I'll do that next year too. I'll like invite one like super small local press to get a chance to talk to the authors or to the librarians, because they're right there. They can work together. So that was the whole idea, like educating the librarians, connecting them with authors about what they're doing. And I have a full recap on both my blogs, but RA for All Horror, you can just search StokerCon and it'll come up, of what we did and what we talked about. And the idea is next year do something similar, to keep connecting different topics, different authors, but keep connecting the authors with the librarians so they can explain themselves to each other. And it was great. We had lots of back and forth. The audience was asking questions and challenging the authors. And the authors were like, well, what do you need from us? But the other thing I do, and I've been doing now for this will be my third year coming up, is talking to the authors specifically who come to the general StokerCon about how their library works, mm-hmm. and how they can work with their library. Yeah. So like one of the things is what I said at the beginning, like libraries need reviews. Like they're like, we can't order books unless there's a review, and I can't review everything. And Amazon reviews and Goodreads reviews are great to get books purchased, but they do not help libraries buy books. Mm. We use Goodreads reviews. I advocate for this everywhere I go when I train library workers, is use Goodreads 5-star reviews and 2-star reviews. Don't use the 1-stars. They're just haters. Mm-hmm. The 2-star people at least have a reason they didn't like it and they'll tell you. But if you read those, you can see for any book why someone would like it or not like it. And then you can help a reader decide if they would like it for themselves, right? Without you ever reading it. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's great for helping readers. But in terms of libraries making purchases to add the books to their collections with their very limited funds, we need to make sure that we have reviews places. And again, I keep a review index of books I've reviewed on my blog, but I also keep a resource list of reviews I would trust for people. And I tell them, I mentioned it before, but it's all there. Like, this is Horror Locus. There's a bunch more I'm just forgetting. But I think Lit Reactor has really good reviews. Places that do good reviews. Oh, tor.com does reviews. So I just have a big list for people. I say, go there and use those to order books. I try to push those lists out to my librarian followers so they know. But the other thing is, you can't just walk in a library and be like, hey, I have this book. Add it to your collection. Because they might really want to, and they might really like you, and your book might be fantastic. But again, libraries are giant administrative government machines with tons of red tape. I don't think authors understand this. Like, we are government bodies. We are funded by taxpayer dollars. We are overseen either by a mayor of a city or by an independently elected board. And even me, even the person who's the published expert on horror in libraries, cannot simply just add a book for no reason to the collection by someone who walks in. But what we can do is you can come and say, hey, I'm a local horror author. I'd love to do a program at the library. Let me tell you, libraries programs are hugely popular and we have a very little budget. So if you're an author and you go in and you say, hey, I have a book. If I do a program, can I sell my book after? They're going to say yes, 99% of the time. There's a couple libraries who just don't allow any sales things. And in which case, you would just give a link to it and ask them to go buy it after. But you could say, I can do a writing class. Most libraries have writing groups, right? I could do a class on the history of horror. I can do a class. I can come and do a program around Halloween on, my favorite scary books. And we can just, whatever you want to do. They're going to take it if you can. That's what Grady always says, too. He was on this panel with me. That's why he turns his books into presentations, because he's not going to just go to a library and be like, here's my book, Paperbacks from Hell. Instead, he does the Paperbacks from Hell presentation. Yeah. He is super popular at libraries. They love having him come because he provides something they can advertise, something that's different and interesting that connects to their collection.
Right? He's such a good presenter. He's so entertaining, too. He makes it interactive and...
Oh, yeah. He's so amazing. Good. You don't have to be that good to do it, but you have to have something to share. And maybe, like I said, maybe you're more introspective and you want to just say, can I come talk to the local writers group? But once you get in and you've done things for a library, and I think J.G. Fardy from the Horror Association, who's the library committee chair, he's great at this. He's created this whole program at libraries in upstate New York where he lives because he said, I know a bunch of writers. And he just used his Horror Writer Association connections and said, who lives within an hour of me? Let's do this. And they do a writing program for teens where they host it at, and they do it at the county library level. And he brings in a whole bunch of his author friends from his surrounding community. Most of them do horror. And they teach the kids how to write. They do a little writing thing. And then they have a contest for their stories. And at the end, they publish all their stories. The library has a small budget for them to self-publish it. They get to edit it. But they are now indispensable members of their communities. And everyone in the community knows them. The library knows them. So and once you get the word out at one place, libraries talk all the time with each other. It is something to say as an author. If you piss off one library, you've pissed off 12,000 libraries. They tell each other when somebody was a jerk. Which is why Grady's doing so great, because he's so nice, right?
Right.
Faraday's doing so great because he's so nice. The word spreads. So depending on where you are, if you live in an area like our libraries in here outside right outside Chicago city limits, we have this large network of libraries who are on the same catalog, but we're all independent libraries, but we all work together. And we literally send out emails to each other on that listserv. Like, I need a program on this. Who should I get? Or I'm doing a local author program. Send me your authors. That's the other thing. Most libraries have a local author shelf. That they can do. If you donate your book, they can put it on the local author's shelf, right? And then you can promote it. But just getting yourself to be indispensable to the local library, that you're there to help them, not that you're there to try to get your book in. You're there to help them. What do you need? What can I do for you? Do you want me to do stuff at Halloween time? One other huge thing at libraries right now are running cons at libraries. So my library does an anime fest that is hugely popular. We bring in creators and authors, and we do have a local comic book shop. My friend who's Emily Vinci, who's at Schaumburg Library, which is northwest of Chicago, is going to be my co-chair for StokerCon. And she literally wrote the book on running fandom programs at your library.
Wow.
And she does it for all fandoms. She happens to really like scary stuff, but they do it for all ages. There are huge ones that happen, and Kansas City has a huge one. Emerald Con in Seattle is a huge con that the library is very involved with. One that's completely library-based, which we highlighted at StokerCon last year because it was regional, is the Merrimack Valley Halloween Book Festival that Christopher Golden James Moore run in Haverhill, Massachusetts. And they do that with the librarian. We had Liz, the librarian they work with, and Christopher on the panel. And they talked about how it started as just a little something small to like 100 authors and like thousands of people and like Joe Hill and Brian Keene and Paul Tremblay, like all these people come to it. Wow. Right. And they get authors from overseas to come, and it's all at a library. And that's what it can turn into. And then they have tiny little authors that no one's heard of too, because they want to expose people. Mm-hmm. So I think the way to start that is to go to your library, to join the HWA, so you can see who's regional, you know, authors in your area who are similar, and band together, and you start small. I mean, I think they're like the fifth year. And Chris was saying in this talk, it was so funny because, you know, he's so nice too, Christopher Golden, but mm-hmm. like Liz was the star because all the librarians were in the audience. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, Chris. Okay, that's great. Now, Liz, tell us this. Like, how do you get the tables? How do you get the chairs? You know, how do you do the crowd control? Because they're librarians ultimately. Yeah. But doing it together, they both said neither of us could have done this alone. And the partnership has been fantastic. And now Liz has gone off and done just a Comic Con on her own at the library. So it just, you start small, but the library is a great place to start because you're on the same team already. Mm-hmm. And yeah. It'll grow your brand and it'll get you out there.
Interesting.
I have so many questions. Okay. First. This is all super great, especially if you're like, already have books out. So what about people like Mackenzie and I who are at the beginning of our careers? Like, is this something we could start now? Yes. And how would you recommend going about something like that?
Yeah. You do not need a book to go in and be like, hey, I'm a new, you know, I'm a local author. I'm currently just writing stories, but you know, you already can say, but you know, I'm a writer. Here's what I've done. I can help your writing group. I can present things. Like, just find a way to do it. You don't need a book to go in there. I want to meet other writers in the community. I want to see if I can help you provide programming because it's great right now. I'm so glad you're doing this now. I know we talked about getting it before October, purposely, because you can go in now as a writer and be like, hey, Halloween's coming. I'm a horror author. You know, I've written a lot of stories, or I'm just starting out, but I know a lot about the genre. Do you need a program at Halloween? I can do it for free. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you can start. If you do that now, when you do have something for them to buy, when your story's in a compilation, when you're, you know, in a magazine published, when you're whatever it is, something they could buy, mm-hmm. they'll want to do it because they know you, and they can say, oh, this person's good. And they might be able to even sneak by with no reviews because they know you. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it can only help you if you go to the locals writers group and offer your services to help them, or also just be part of it. It only can help you to meet other like-minded people in the community. You can also, like I said, it only can help you to be providing programming for the library, because really, as I've learned, because all I do is give presentations. It's like 90% of my job. I don't know. 50% is giving presentations and 50% is writing. But when I'm giving a presentation, I've written the presentation. So it is like 90% of my job is writing about, right. You know, because only 10% is giving it. And I have learned so much about telling a story and telling, you know, in my case, I'm telling something true. I'm telling a narrative, nonfiction type story. But in getting my point across in a concise way, my writing has improved by the presentations I've given. Mm-hmm. Because I have a time limit. I have an audience. I know what works and what doesn't. And libraries are big on evaluations. They give people like evaluate our program because we love data. And we always have, even before it was hip to love data. We loved data. We don't collect any of your personal data, but we just collect data.
there we go.
So funny because like we don't, like people are like, well, don't you know what books I checked out? I'm like, unless you self opt in, I have no idea what you're checking out. And even then I can't see it. So sorry. Or like the people are like, well, what's my password? I'm like, I don't know what your password is. We do not know. We know nothing. You know, we collect as little data as possible. But on usage, we collect a lot. So you can even get feedback. That's been one of the greatest things working with libraries is I do a presentation and I immediately get feedback, you know, from the attendees on what was good and what was bad. It can only help you be a better writer to get that immediate feedback on how you presented the material. And so, yeah, I'm sure everybody out there who's a writer has some kind of, maybe you want to just read one of your short stories. Maybe you want to say, hey, I can tell, quote unquote, tell ghost stories for Halloween, you know, and read one of your stories.
That is awesome. And then, so what about, like we talked about at the beginning of the interview, how there's some like librarians can be kind of scared of horror genre mm-hmm. and horror readers. So do you think that approaching them and saying, I'm a horror author, I would like to do some sort of horror programming or whatever, would they be open to that because it's not their wheelhouse? So it's like, here, I would like to give this to someone who it is their wheelhouse, or is there still like, should we be afraid of that like reaction of like, ooh, that's kind of scary. I don't know if I want to
do that here.
I think that's very fair. And what you do is, first of all, good news, horror writers are the nicest people I've ever met. That's
very true.
Oh my gosh. Like it is. Somebody said recently to me, it's because we get all our like awful stuff out on the page. And that must be true. Cause all I do is read about terrible things and write about terrible things. But then like, I'm super happy and nice. And everybody is, I mean, so nice. Even the people that don't need to be nice to you, you know, these like huge best-selling authors and they're all so kind. So that's what horror writers have going for them is, everyone I've met is nice and kind. So you're going to be counterbalancing that stereotype immediately by coming in and being so nice and kind. Number one. Number two, again, as we already talked about, horror is super hot. You don't need an in. You can be like, hey, did you see that NPR's entire summer reading thing is about horror? Do you want me to help you do a local something about it? Because everyone's going to be talking about it. Hereditary, so cool. You know, is like hugely hereditary. It's hugely popular. Do you want to do something? Like you can go in right now and just use what's popular. I can help you get a free program on it. Do you want to have like show a horror movie? Because libraries have movie showing licenses. Mm-hmm. And then I can lead a discussion. People love film discussion groups. That's another one I forgot. Right? Do you want to start? I saw how popular horror is. Do you want to start a horror book club? You know, I can help. I'll do it. You know, you just come with ideas. Like whatever you want to do, use the fact that horror is so popular, or use Halloween. Halloween's a great in, right? Mm-hmm. But libraries plan 3 to 6 months in advance, just so you know. That's the other thing that writers don't understand. Like literally, I know where I'm going to be the whole rest of the year. Libraries have booked me. I'm booking 2019 right now. Wow. I know we're ordering books 3 to 6 months in advance. We're planning programming 3 to 6 months in advance. A lot of it's based on our newsletter cycles. Even though we do e-newsletters, the print newsletter is still really popular. We tried to get rid of ours at my local library where I'm a trustee. We're like, we don't need this anymore. We got feedback back that 90% of the people who replied, you know, to the survey, the 90% said, yes, keep the print newsletter. We love it. I'm like, oh my God, it's 2018, but fine. So, and we have to go by our newsletter schedule because it's got to get in there for more people to see it, right? And then the newsletter schedule, we all have these online calendars, and then that feeds the online calendar, and then that the newsletter schedule, and then the newsletter feeds the online, and the online feeds the things that the marketing person will do as the like special things to pull out, like maybe a month before, 2 weeks before. So we're very far in advance. We are not working. You can't show up like the week before Halloween and be like, hey, let's do a Halloween program because they've already planned them all. Right, but anything, anytime something is happening that is popular, I think the summer reading is a huge thing right now. With mm-hmm. NPR doing horror as summer, every library does summer reading in some form or another. You can go in and be like, hey, do you want me to help you guys make a list? Do you want, you know, just find a way, whatever's your thing that you're good at that you can mm-hmm. provide. How can I help? I'm a horror author. How can I help? And then just see what they say.
That is so cool.
Well, and I had a question too, because the library that's closest to me belongs to the university. It's the biggest one here too. And so I completely understand reaching out and the importance of reaching out to like your local community libraries. But for the university, who is it that I ask for? Because it's the students that are working the desk.
Yes, that's a great question too. So I have a really good friend. Her name's Carolyn Ciesla. She reviews horror for Booklist also. And she is the dean of an academic library in just outside the city limits of Chicago, a community college. And her and I have done a presentation on sort of getting more public library type stuff into academic libraries. For mm-hmm. many people, for a huge population, it's the students, the professors, the people, the workers at the college, and the people who live nearby. That's their local library. So libraries are starting to do a lot. Academic libraries are starting to do a lot more in leisure reading in general. horror happens to go really well, especially with a young adult population, because it's a popular genre with young adults. And I mean young adults, not like teens. I mean like, you know, 20-somethings who are reading adult books. So horror, all genre fiction tends to do very well at university libraries. But who you ask for is going to, that's the other thing about bureaucracies. It's going to be different at every library.
Oh, gosh.
If it's really, really small academic library, like my friends at a community college, you ask for the dean. And so she is the dean.
Yeah.
And she would be able to talk to you about it, and she would be able to find you the person. But at a huge library, you probably want to go to the reference desk where the students are and ask, who is the university librarian? Who would be the one, or who buys your fiction collection?
Okay.
So who buys your fiction collection? And then you talk to that person, and then they get you where you need to go. And then if you can't get that person's name from them, then the university librarian would be like the head librarian, not necessarily the dean, but that's like the head librarian, like the boss of all the workers. And then that person can get you down. Yes, you do not want to go to the desk and like circulation desk ever at the library and be like, hey, I'm an author. You want to go to the desk where the fiction is happening. And at the university library, they won't have a desk, but who buys the fiction?
Yeah.
Your library, check if your library, academic library, has any special collections that have anything to do with speculative fiction at all. Of course, there's like huge ones, like Brown has the Hay, which has the Lovecraft and the Caitlin Kiernan archives now. And there's the one of the Kansases, somewhere in Kansas, there's like a big science fiction and fantasy library. And that's fine. But see if they have the papers of anybody, of any authors. Or, you know, you can just do that research on the special collections on the website.
Yeah.
That's a great way to look like you know what you're doing. Librarians love if you sound like you've at least looked at the library. Right?
Sure.
I see that you have this, or I see, or like, so if you go in and you see that they have a small leisure reading collection for their community, right? The patrons they have, you can go and say like, I saw you have this small collection. How do you pick those books? You know, I'm a writer. I like to know about these things. And I use the library to do research and just find a way to show you know what's going on.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
That's so cool. It's, I feel like it's like this huge untapped well. And I'm like, as we're talking, I'm like, oh my gosh, thinking of all this stuff I want to try to do now. It's like so cool.
I'm like already getting nervous.
I think you're right though. I think that writers don't see libraries because they think, well, people just get my books for free. They don't see it as a place where they can make their name stand out and then grow from there. It is free. Libraries are the only place in America, someone was just writing this recently, where we don't ask you to pay and we give you what you want. You know, you've paid with your taxes. And you make a minimal payment and you can check out whatever you want. I currently have 5 books checked out of the library, and I'm going to Northern Minnesota for vacation. And I just put 12 guidebooks on hold. That's like $1,000 worth of books that I'm getting for quote unquote free. Like I've hit my quota of my like $100 in taxes already.
Right.
And so libraries are a way to, for writers to get themselves into the community of book people. And yes, it's small. You start with your local one, but you build out from there. You can't just, you know, you have to like go to Amazon and like figure out a way to get yourself to rise to the top or buy an ad somewhere.
Yeah.
We don't ask for any money from you as the patron either or the author. Mm-hmm. We just want you to, you know, come and share the love of books and help us. It's a great way to find a way, foothold in, untapped well, of the book world for no money.
For sure.
That's very interesting. And I think the only reason too why I sort of steered away from libraries as a kid is because I was going in as this little kid asking for these huge dark books. And quite often I knew what I was looking for, and the librarians, they were trying desperately to help me, but they just either didn't have it or didn't know where to steer me for something like that. So it's very possible too that I grew up next to one of the libraries you spoke of that just didn't include horror very much.
Yeah. And also I have to say, until very recently, helping people find the books they want to read for fun was not something in general that library workers were trained in. Mm. I mean, when I taught my class from 2004 to 2000 and whatever, 8 years after that is 12. Yeah. I was training 50 students approximately a year to go out and be librarians in the Chicago area to do that. And so we happen to have a very robust community of readers advisors here in Chicago. It's also where Readers Advisory was invented. It was in Downers Grove by the woman I taught with, Joyce Sarricks, who's the audio editor at Booklist right now. But so we're a very, very robust area of doing that. But I get hired to go all over the country to teach basic readers advisory skills to libraries still.
Yeah.
So some of it isn't just that they didn't know about the books. They didn't know. And they still don't all know how to help people.
For sure.
Yeah. So we can help. If you have an expertise in a specific genre, you can help. I had a guy when I started at my library, our science fiction fantasy collection was a mess. And we had a pretty high readership. And my coworker and I started this department. No one had run it for years. Mm-hmm. We had to come and clean it up. And I just didn't have time. So I found our number one science fiction fantasy reader. And I said, here's what you're going to do for me. And he was so excited. You're going to go through and you're going to look at the collection and you're going to tell me where our holes are, where we have things that we just need to get rid of. And I didn't just take his word for it, but I used him as like my pre-reader, right?
Yeah.
And he pre-read my collection. And then I photocopied I gave him old copies of Booklist and Library Journal that were already like a year old. I said, look through these reviews. What books here would you want to see in our collection? Yeah. Right. And I couldn't go order all of them because it was from like a year or two ago, but it gave me a sense of what he was looking for. And he just kept helping us over time, sort of like our pre-reader. And we made our collection in about a year or two to be so much better than it actually took. Yeah. It was 2 years because I literally did the final weed of the collection. I started in the summer of 2000. My daughter was born in the summer of 2002 and 8.5 months pregnant. I was weeding that collection. I will never forget it. I was like pulling books and moving them and it was hot and I was really big and it was just, yeah. But in 2 years, we got that collection in tip top shape. And then we just kept it after that. Maintaining it once you fixed it is fine. But we used his help. That's the kind of things you could do to help people. Like, hey, do you want me to help you get your collection ready before Halloween? And here are some resources and here are books I'm excited about. Yeah.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Now, that being said, some librarians are still the old fuddy-duddies who are very particular and they will not like being told by you how to do their job. I will tell you.
That's everywhere, though. That's okay.
Okay, fair. But it's a little higher percentage in libraries. It's a little higher percentage. And I, especially with the older group, and they're starting to retire. And I am often combating that when I go into libraries.
I wasn't
going to
say retire.
They are. But libraries have very generous retirement. Like I have a pension and because I got vested after 8 years. I was there 15 mm-hmm. years. And I have a pension when I turned 60, which is great. So they do retire at about 60 or after a certain number of years. But the problem is, there's some that are older that just went to library school and are super excited because it's like a second career. So you can't just judge by age. I know some like people my age in their like early 40s who are more curmudgeonly than I am because they just didn't get the same kind of more progressive education I did in library school.
Sure, sure.
So just be wary if they snap at you, just go try a different library.
Okay, that's fair.
Oh my gosh, this has given me so much to think about. I'm so excited. Is there anything that our listeners should know about regarding you, any events or anything forthcoming they should keep their eyes open for, or just anything you'd like to put out there?
Yeah, let me tell you about a few things. I mentioned the Library Journal article and the July 1st issue, which will be a preview of stuff that's coming out. Every August is the science fiction, fantasy, and horror spotlight issue for Booklist. They do put out a top 10 for horror. I was so excited last year because they did a science fiction fantasy combined, but horror got its own list. Now, to be fair, though, they take the all the books that got star reviews, and I do most of the star reviews, but and then Daniel Krauss, who's also a horror author, he wrote The Shape of Water with Guillermo del Toro, the book, mm-hmm. but he also wrote like Rotters and a bunch of other books. He is the youth books editor. So he becomes like the de facto horror person. So he takes my reviews and usually his reviews and all the star reviews and picks a list of the top 10. Then in in the October 1st issue of Library Journal, and you can get this at your library, on the back page, it's something called the Reader's Shelf. I do that column every October 1st and every April 15th, which I call halfway to Halloween. Try to make it a thing. Mm-hmm. But it's good for libraries. They like holidays, so we make fake ones. But October 1st, I do best debuts. I'm starting to compile those authors and titles now. And then in the entire month of October, and I know I've asked you guys to participate in this, I do a blogathon where I blog on my horror blog every single day. It nearly kills me because I do two blogs every day. That's also when we have the Illinois Library Association conference, and I'm always doing stuff at that. I'm actually have three presentations at that. Wow. And Columbus Day is the biggest day for library in-service days. So like I've been booked for over a year to go to somewhere for 2 days to do training. But I do it. But one of the big things I do during October, during my blogathon, is this series of why I love horror. And I go out and ask people who work in the horror industry to share with me why they love horror and why they write it, but also why they love reading it. And what I love is I keep it very open, and I've already asked a whole bunch of people to participate. And what I love about keeping it open, it is you get to see the full range of why people like it so much, without telling, and the librarians then get to see like, this is all the different reasons people like to be scared or like the scary book. I've even in the past asked librarians who are afraid of horror to write me about why they're afraid of the genre, which is kind of fun. And I tag all those with why I love horror. So that's really fun to go back and look at those. And then finally, the big thing, besides StokerCon 2019, but you'll hear a lot about that from me if you read my blog coming up. But I do have to say I had a conference call 2 days ago with Grady Hendrix and J.G. Fardy, two people I've already mentioned, which is why they've been on my mind. And the three of us have a very big announcement that's coming in October. We're working on it right now, and we'll be introducing a brand new Horror Writers Association backed with other sponsors program to promote horror at all age levels. And Grady has agreed to be our quote unquote celebrity spokesperson.
Oh,
and
wow.
We are assembling a committee right now. And our goal is to have the big announcement on what the program is in October to coincide with Halloween. And then sometime this winter, sometime near when the StokerCon long lists are coming out, we will have more details. And then we will have on Librarian Day at StokerCon a huge program all about this featuring authors. So, and it's going to be a way for libraries and authors to connect even better. So
oh my
look
gosh.
For that.
That is so
I know.
That's perfect. That's
so yes,
cool.
we're very excited. We're working out some of the details and assembling a committee of people. And we will, like I said, we are ready to have it announced sometime in October. So we'll be doing it through an HWA press release, and I'll be doing it on my blog also. So you should look for that. And really, if you're an author of any kind, there will be something you can get out of this because it'll be promoting the genre. The whole goal of it is to help promote the genre even more. But you may want to come to StokerCon because we'll be doing stuff on it, both Librarians Day and possibly during the regular con itself too. We might do a program on it.
Yeah.
So buy your tickets now, Grand Rapids in May.
Yes. Oh my gosh, so exciting. That's so cool. I can't wait.
We're already excited. We left last StokerCon excited for the next StokerCon. So
I know it was so much fun. Providence was a lot of fun.
It was really
say.
Well, and it
really was.
That crazy
and the storm.
Oh, it was awesome.
It was so cool.
I was actually out in it on that day Friday because my sister came down to bring my new nephew. She lives up in New England. And
oh my gosh.
I took my niece and my brother-in-law to the Children's Museum there. Yeah. And we were like literally walking against the wind, like soaking wet. We had so much fun though. It was fun. My niece thought it was the greatest. She's three, so it was very cool to her.
That's awesome. Yeah, we had a blast.
We did. I just watched it because, you know, you can see on our conference, I'm from California. So I've only heard about weather. I don't really know what weather even is. So I just watched it. I was just fascinated by it.
It was pretty fierce. I know. And those of us who are planning, like who are on the planning team, we're like, okay, Victor Laval's on a train. Like his train is delayed because he was one of our special guests, right?
Yeah.
So Victor Laval's on a train. We need to get him here. So he was a little bit late because of it. We're like, we need to get him here. He is a special guest. And there were multiple people who were talking, like, what's his name? The guy who wrote Kill Creek. which was up for best first novel. Well, he was Scott Thomas, I think it is. I'm not sure, but Kill Creek. He was literally trying to get there to be at the banquet, and he was texting with me.
Oh.
And he's like, so my plane just got canceled. Should I try to get to Baltimore? I'm like, yeah, no, it is not going to happen. And like Linda Addison's son couldn't make it. And she was the lifetime achievement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like he would have made it, but after the banquet. So yeah. So there was like some bad things about it. And there were some stressful things that all of us who were planning were like, please, like water was coming in places. We're like, please just not. But, in the
one of the windows blew out up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And, so it was from the planner's standpoint, we were a little freaked out, but it was cool freaked out. So
we were there for Grady Hendrix's his performance. Were we calling it, Lisa?
Yeah, it was like a his performance on the Fox Sisters.
Oh, I was there too. I was in the front. Yeah, yes. I was there too. Oh,
we were in the front together, Becky.
That was awesome.
And it was so cool because the storm was happening. So he's like doing this like spooky performance and story and like
the candle and the wind.
It was so cool.
Yeah.
That was awesome. We're already excited for next StokerCon and definitely to meet you face to face too, Becky.
Awesome.
So before we kind of start wrapping up, we just had a couple of final questions for you. So what is the one classic book that you've never read and you don't plan on reading?
One classic book I've never read and I don't plan on reading, you know,
the one that you've always like skirted around.
Yeah. So I have to tell you, it's Anna Karenina, because I have read a lot of Russian literature. One of my favorite books is The Master and Margarita by Bulgakov. But mm-hmm. I did take a Russian literature class and I was supposed to read Anna Karenina. But I have to tell you, I have a thing about books where women decide that the only option is to kill themselves. So spoiler alert, by the way, like I read The Awakening and I know it's this great work of feminist literature. I'm like, yeah, no, walking out into the ocean to die is not how you fight the man. Okay.
I fucking hate that book.
I hate that book. Like you fight the man. You don't give up to the man. Right.
No.
So Anna Karenina, I'm like, yeah, no, I can't, you know, you make your bed, you lie in it, girl.
Right.
And
yeah,
you
exactly.
Don't, you just kill yourself to get off the hook. Like that's just cowardly and stupid. Like, you did this, figure it out. Or like, oh, there's no other options for women. Figure it out. There are.
Right,
options.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially when it's like you're writing a book about like women and like what they can do during oppression. It's like, that's your answer? Okay.
Well, you could die.
Right. So I think that's the book. I'm just not going to go there. And you know, people have argued with me about both The Awakening and Anna Karenina, like, but it was a time. It was a time period. I'm like, I get that. But there are other people, it's just the books we didn't read that were fighting the man. Those books were suppressed, you know, and now we see as those books are, you know, found and turned over. And there were people that were saying, no, this is not okay. They were just labeled things like lesbians or feminists or something mm-hmm. terrible that meant that they couldn't, you know, do it. It's like the same thing I say, we're looking at colleges with my daughter and I did not share my opinion about all girls schools, which is the world is co-ed. So if you go to a single sex school, you're not preparing yourself to deal with men. Mm-hmm. But she even said, why would I go to school without, well, she didn't want to go because, you know, boys. But she also was like, but there's men in the world. Like, I want to be with like equals in school. I'm like, yes. Okay. Well, it's my daughter. So it's like the same argument I make. Like, it's me. I know it's me personally. I know there's literary merit to it. I'm not going to read it.
It's just not your thing. Yep. And I love it. That's one of the reasons we've talked about this, like one of the reasons why we asked that question is because we're just like, we're looking, coming at it from an angle of like, I'm not going to read this and I don't feel bad about it.
Like, oh no, I'm don't feel bad at all. Like,
well, and we've noticed too, that it's a much different like question too than what's your favorite book? Because nobody can really answer that. Like nobody that we interview anyway can really answer that question. It's terrible and changes all the time. But tends to be there is like one or two books that have stuck with us where we're like, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
And I don't care if I should have read it. Like I'm not going to.
Yep.
Oh, I literally should have read it. It was assigned for a class I was in and I chose not to read it. Like I literally should have read it. And I know how to skim. So I was like, I didn't have to write an essay on it. I just had to read it. So I was like, this is fine. I'll read about it. I'm fine.
Yeah.
You're like, I read it. Thanks.
After The Awakening, I was like, I can never do this again. You can never do this to me again. I will.
Yeah. I didn't even finish that one. It was assigned to me as well. And I think I read half of it. So when you're like, oh yeah, she walks out into the ocean and dies. I'm like, oh, maybe I should have finished that book. Like,
Yeah, no, you're good.
Or not, or not.
I really, she was kind of annoying for the whole book, too.
Well, exactly. I wanted her to die. So that actually
that's kind of the problem. I was like, yeah, you're not. Yeah, I don't like you. So whatever.
It's cool. Yeah, we're good. Okay. And then our final question, Becky, what superpower would you have? Any superpower you want?
Yes. Yeah, and I just always have wanted to fly. I don't know why. I still have dreams about flying. It's
really?
Just, it would be I don't cool. know if it's because you can see the world from like above, but I still to this day have dreams that I can fly, like regularly. I don't know why, but it obviously strikes a chord with me because I think about it involuntarily frequently.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So I'm sure that's the one I would want. And I just think it's so like freeing and I don't know yet I to say this, you know, both my children have done here in Illinois. We have these iFly places like indoor skydiving where they like blow you up in a tube and you like get to feel like you're flying. For their 13th birthdays, each of them got to do that with some friends. And they're always like, do you want to do it? And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, it blows air up at you, right? So, and then it's like such a force of air that it's almost like simulates skydiving.
Simulates skydiving, basically. And I don't want to skydive either. I don't want to fall.
Yeah.
I want to fly.
I want to lift
it's
off.
It's different.
Yeah.
I want controlled movement in the air.
Yeah. That's awesome. I think that would be fun too.
It would be. All right. Thank you very much, Becky. Like that's what we've got for you. Unless there's is there any last bits of?
Yeah. So one last thing, where can our listeners find you? I think you mentioned it before, but let's just remind them.
So the main place to find me is my blog, RA for All. So it's the letter R, the letter A, F-O-R, the word for, A-L-L, .blogspot.com. But if you just write RA for All in Google, it'll come up immediately. Mm-hmm. People say to me, like, why do you use Blogspot? I'm like, because Google, like everyone uses Google and they put their search strategies first. Duh. Like, you know, but and then the evil twin is RA for All horror.blogspot.com. But you can get to either from either. Mm-hmm. And then I'm the place where I am on social media is Twitter. I'm at RA for All. So it's all. Again, the letter R-A, the word F-O-R-A-L-L. And mm-hmm. I am there all the time. I think as my bio says, like, I'm always matching books with readers through the library, mm-hmm. and I'm sometimes doing horror. But I'm librarian Twitter is very active, and we work together really well. We're all going to be together at the library conference coming up too. So now's a good time to follow a librarian Twitter because it's going to be going crazy. When this comes out, I'll literally be presenting at the conference. So about books I'm excited about that are coming out soon. So, awesome. But we're all talking about libraries and we're talking about authors we like and don't like all the time. So but people,
be nice.
Yeah, but you know what? Don't joke. People are always saying to me, like the other day, someone just said to me, Becky, they did a direct message. Do you know any Native American horror writers? I'm like Stephen Graham Jones. And he's really nice because I know him because we were guests of honor together. We also have daughters the exact same age. And let me tell you, teenage daughters, you need friends. You have daughters the same age to share stories. I was like, and he's nice and he will talk to you. Here's how to contact him. And she was like, thanks. And he was like, thanks, you know.
Right.
So we all do help each other. We know who likes what and we spread the word. It's a great place to see me. So at RA for All.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
It's been great. I'm so excited talking to you guys. And I'll see you soon, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you so much for listening to the Ladies of the Fright podcast, episode 14, part 2 of the Becky Spratford interview. We'd like to thank our listeners and invite you to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find us at ladiesofthefright.com. If you like what you hear and you'd like to support us and help us gain visibility, please leave us a review on iTunes. Be sure to tune in next week for episode 15, July 9th, where we talk about everything vampire with a vampire specialist, Natalie Ferrigno. I'm Mackenzie Kira, and always joined by my co-host, Lisa Quigley.
That's me.
We're signing off. Stay dark and storming.